peace. Dr. Rabinowitz, how are you? I'm fine, thanks. Not sick? No aches or pains?
You're better than I am. I came down with a cold, so I hope you
did
you?
did you get your flu shot?
You know, it's supposed to be, I think we talked about this last week.
Yeah, I know.
You're supposed to get the get it in October or earlier.
Yeah, I've had mine.
To you, I usually give it out to my patients first.
Yeah.
And I was just waiting, so I will honestly tell you I did. And then, of course, I came down with this cold.
Yeah.
So,
And we tell people, of course, that a cold is not the flu. Correct?
Correct. The cold is a viral illness. The flu is you're minding your business, and all of a sudden, you come down with the most horrible body aches of your life.
Right.
Shaking chills, a dry cough, a high fever, a headache. And if you call your doctor within 48 hours, you can be started on antiviral medication.
Mm-hmm. I think I had I've been getting a flu shot for years. I think I've had, I know I've had the flu in the past, and I think what's significant that you just said, I think that's the ache and pain thing. Your bones hurt, your muscles hurt. Yeah, you're right. Well, you know what you're talking about, doctor. What are we going to talk about now?
Well, what we're going to talk about today is sort of the differences between, you know, traditional medical practices and people, you know, will commonly, so I'm going to tell you, commonly say, which is what happened with medicine, why aren't things better, why do I have to wait, why can't I get in to see my doctor, in spite of that, I had this discussion with one of my colleagues this morning. If you look at the number of people that are going to medical school, there's more people going to medical school. I got a letter. I'm a graduate of Temple Medical School, and I've been on staff there you know, as an assistant professor for a number of years.
Yes.
The number in the average classes, when I was in school, was about 188. Now it's like 400 people. But the problem is, people are not going into primary care specialties. They're avoiding pediatrics, internal medicine, and family practice. And so you may have, let's say, 100 people graduating, maybe only 2% or more traditionally over the last 20 years have gone into primary care specialties. Mm-hmm. Then with attrition, with doctors dying, moving, leaving their practice, relocating to other areas, you know, it creates a void. And the, you know, being in a free market society, the one of the ways of filling that void is the you know, the business community steps in. So all of a sudden, what you're seeing now are urgent care centers. You're seeing the CVS, you know, other places, Walmart.
You mean giving out flu shots and everything?
Well, giving out more than that.
Oh, really?
They'll be staffed with a nurse practitioner. Tell people, my sister-in-law was telling me one of her, his four children, one of them became ill. They called the pediatrician's office. There was no shot at getting in for a week. They were referred to either the CVS or an urgent care center.
Ew.
They went to the CVS, which was down the street, to only encounter a three-hour wait to get into the CVS. And, well, it's very frustrating. Now, certainly they do serve a purpose, and I think that for minor medical problems, sore throat and earache, maybe light suturing, somebody, you know, maybe cut themselves, you know, and bleeding doesn't stop. I think they clearly serve a purpose. It's less expensive than going to an emergency room.
Do they take insurance in these places?
I believe they do.
Yeah.
I believe they do. They're, in the beginning, there weren't billing codes for urgent care centers, where now there are. So I do believe those visits are reimbursable visits. But, you know, if you think about it, what do you do if you're a patient?
Mm-hmm.
You have a doctor, maybe you have to only go once a year, but you're ill. Now you need somebody. So you pick up the phone and you call, and they tell you the average, maybe it's a week. And as crazy as that sounds, I can show you lots of people that have experienced that, people, you know, before they joined my practice.
Mm-hmm.
And what do? Do you want to go to that ER and sit there for hours and then get hit with an enormous bill?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you say, well, there's an urgent care center or a minute clinic, let me go there. And once again, if it's a very minor thing, a sore throat, earache, a sinus infection, and they can temporize it and make a determination if somebody's not seriously ill, I think it serves a purpose. I think that what people need to realize is it's not an emergency room, so that if somebody's not well and they want to get checked out, there's about a 20% chance they will be sent to an emergency room because they'll very quickly identify this is really something that is potentially serious and needs to be sent out. And they should be commended for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem is that they don't have your records. So when you walk in, you're a blank slate. And I will tell you that it's difficult enough to take care of people that come into a hospital that are not your patients if they're being referred to you for some reason. People can't remember their history. They're upset. They're ill. They can't remember their medicines. They, I met with an orthopedic surgeon this morning about a patient who on the surface seems, he's a very happy-go-lucky guy, doc, I'm fine. But it turned out under the surface was very complicated. And the caring for this man with his surgery that's upcoming is going to involve multiple specialists and consultants, even before he comes near a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
This is face-to-face communication between physicians, decision-making, what's the best for this patient.
Mm-hmm.
And so that in the real world of medicine, if it's really done academically and properly, there's a lot that goes on. The patient never sees that. You tell them that you've done it, but they don't really see that. And that's sort of lost if you're only going to say, well, I'm going to get my care at a MinuteClinic. The other thing, too, is that I really don't think people give enough credit to what a physician provides. A physician is someone that has spent 4 years in college in the most competitive courses,
mm-hmm.
then 4 years in medical school,
mm-hmm.
learning the quantity of information that needs to be learned is staggering
mm-hmm.
in 4 years. Then you have to go do an internship where now you're, a supervised physician followed by a residency. So that you're in school for me, including graduate school, I don't think I started to actually practice till 33. Now, I was mm-hmm. very well trained, but that's very different than somebody that maybe has is a physician's assistant or a nurse practitioner, where they maybe have gone to college, I think in the case of a nurse practitioner, where they've actually been involved caring for people. Now they get, in the case of a nurse practitioner, it's a master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
But the training is different.
Of course.
We're trained to deal with complex situations, complex problems, where I think in the perfect world, dealing with a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant is someone that should be taking in the information, being able to realize, look, this seems like a problem that's self-limited that I can handle. And in spite of that, running it by the medical doctor, the supervising doctor,
mm-hmm.
and what I'm afraid happens is that everybody is so busy that that's not what really occurs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a patient, you need to say to yourself, look, what do I want? What kind of care? And for some things, I'll be frank with you, I think for routine gynecologic care, they do an amazing job. They really do. They spend time with women. I had a patient the other day that just told me it was a nurse practitioner that picked up a mass in her daughter's breast. So they do a great job. But I think it's something that's clearly necessary. But
I will not go to the nurse practitioner.
Well, I think it depends.
If the doctor's busy and they say, well, the nurse practitioner is available, no, I don't go.
No, and there's people that do it. One of my patients was in the emergency room, and he said that to me, and he said, if I'm paying for this, I'm not paying any less money, why can't I get a doctor? And I said, I have no argument for you.
Let me interrupt you, Dr. Rabinowitz.
No way negative against PAs and nurses.
No.
They're, I think in today's world, it's
no, they're well trained.
They do a great job. But yeah. I think that what people don't get about what a physician does because they don't see it is that someone that comes to me, look, my practice is different. It's a prevention-based medical practice. There's a small fee for 4 hours a day. It's the same as what people pay much more to drink coffee and way more to drink cigarettes. But I'm the one that directly cares for them, and I have a team that works with me so that we arrange all of our patients' care. I spend hours every day on the phone with specialists and consultants coming up with the proper treatment plan for every individual patient that I see. There is no way somebody with lesser training is capable of doing that. It's just not, it's not possible. It's not what their role is, not what they're supposed to do. And I think the result of that are better outcomes. I will tell you that there are very large national studies, there's congressional testimony, that people that come to a practice like mine, a prevention-based medical practice, are hospitalized up to 85% less.
Oh, I believe that. Absolutely.
And why? Uh-huh. They have access. They can pick up the phone. My patients call me, if necessary, 24 hours a day. They call me directly on my cell phone. So there is no, one of the frustrations of calling a traditional practice is the answering systems. Now, they've developed because the average medical practice is maybe 3,000 people. They expect with physician attrition that to go up to maybe 4,000 to 5,000 people. So you've got thousands of people calling. You can't hire enough receptionists. So it's, you know, push one if you're dying, push two if you're not really dying, push three if you're bleeding, push, you know.
You know what I do? I make up stories.
Well, the other thing, Pat, is that people will, and Bible tells me this has happened to me when I was with a traditional large volume medical practice. Yeah. I was off and I happened to call, one of the calling to get messages, and I was put on hold for God knows how long, only to get this. Doctor's office, please hold, and a receptionist makes contact and hangs the phone up again.
Oh, that happens all the time.
And I wanted to have a stroke. I called my partners on their cell phone. I said, fire whoever did that.
That's common. That is very common. I make a joke about it. They say, please hold. And then I say, well, I don't know. I'm having a heart attack. But no one's there. You know, I just talk into the phone. I'm having a heart attack. I'm bleeding from the ears. I mean, that is common. It's horrible.
Well, it's very common. And what these are, they're just barriers to care. Someone that comes to my mm-hmm. practice, we have private phone lines. So, yes, there are backup systems because you have to have a backup system.
Yeah.
But they call to get a live person.
Yeah.
We go over the patient so that my patient, my staff knows who has asthma, who has a heart condition. And that when people call, I'll give you a perfect example. Patient calls and said, I'd like to schedule an appointment. The staff said, well, my ask what the nature of the appointment is. Well, I'm having issues. It's a common word. I don't know what issues mean, actually. I know what problems are. I don't know what issues are. And the staff said, well, can you tell me a little bit more? Are you having pain? Well, yes. Well, where's your pain? It's in my chest. Chest pain. Well, you know, maybe you need
There's
to go to the
flag.
ER. Maybe this isn't appropriate for, you know, even for my practice. And the patient said, absolutely not. I want to come in. They said, well, you better come right over. And told me to the clinic when the gentleman was having a heart attack. So mm-hmm. I picked up the phone. And I called the cardiologist that I deal with, and we called the cardiac cath lab, and the patient was sent directly from my office, where he went to the waiting arms of multiple cardiologists and had his angioplasty, mm-hmm. and his life was saved.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody's sitting there on the phone, some people would just give up and maybe hit the ER after hours or days of this out of frustration. So I think what the public needs to hear is that they talk about socialized medicine, but in America, are we really any different than a socialized country other than the fact that it costs us extra money? It's a one-way street.
Mm-hmm.
It's a system run by Medicare, run by Medicaid, and run by insurance carriers. They make the rules. And what we're saying is that there are alternatives to that, and they're affordable. It's really for anybody that... you know, I heard a quote once that said, it's better to spend a little bit more than you have to than a little bit less than you should.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's nothing truer in healthcare because you really do get what you pay for.
Oh, you do. Now, I want to ask you one thing. You know, when we have the insurance, what does insurance pay you?
Well, what insurance pays for are episodes of CARES, care and conditions. They recently, in October, just increased, it's called the ICD-10 system now, but it's basically a system of codes that was invented in, I believe, the 1800s to allow physicians to communicate with each other about different diseases using numbers and letters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been refined. And it's actually, my partner, I said, it's not a bad thing because it's very, very specific. So you're telling the insurance company exactly what was wrong. So if someone comes in with back pain and it runs down their leg and it seems like sciatica, you need to tell them, well, they have acute sciatica or is it chronic? Is it one leg or both legs?
Mm-hmm.
Are they, you know, it's a very specific system. So I imagine that data is used in population studies or looking at reimbursements, and I think it's sort of helpful. Well, so an insurance company pays for episodes of care, but insurance isn't, for example, paying for a doctor's time. If I'm spending an hour on the phone with the Mayo Clinic reviewing patient data with the patient not in the room, I can't bill anybody for that.
No, but let me ask you this. If most of our insurance plans, I know how your practice works. The people pay up front a certain amount of money.
Well, or it's basically $4 a day.
Okay, so that's what, over $1,000 though, a year, correct? How much?
Correct, which is less than most people's cable bill. Okay. Much less than smoking cigarettes, probably half.
Yeah, and I'm all for it. You don't have to convince me. I think it's a terrific thing. But what I want to say is, in my insurance plan, I have $1,000 deductible. Why would that not pay that?
Well, they don't, because they sort of have rules about that.
Well, they should pay it.
Preventative. For example, I bring people in throughout the year just for prevention-based visits. So I'll give you an example. You come to the doctor and you say to the doctor, listen, I'm here for my blood pressure, my rear end hurts. The doctor says, well, before they put in new preventative guidelines, you haven't had a cardiogram in a couple of years, I'd probably going to check that. You couldn't get paid, so you'd have to put down patient had palpitations, they had chest pain. You have to put some reason. Now you can actually use a preventative code and do that and say, well, you know, they came in for a checkup, or a doctor can say, listen, diet, exercise, lose weight, get your bone density, go to the gynecologist, get a colonoscopy. Now you can check off, you gave the patient preventative counseling, and you did. That maybe took you, what, 20 seconds to get those words out of your mouth? 50% of people never do it. Studied the New England Journal of Medicine. In a practice such as mine, then when I'm going over that, they then leave my office to go to meet with my staff, who doesn't let them leave, until those appointments are scheduled and tracked to make sure they show up. Now, sometimes people cancel appointments, and then you have preventative visits. Most people, two-thirds of the country, are overweight or obese. People need help. Mm-hmm. Behavior modification. And you can tell people to diet and exercise. It's hollow. What does that mean in English to anybody? When you meet with the doctor says, look, I want to see, let me give you computer programs, apps for your phone to use. I want to see what do you really do. And then you can say, look, I'm going to give you two behaviors that I need you to change. Just two. Let's see what happens in 2 to 3 months. You can change the whole, if you're a ship, and you alter the course by a couple of degrees, you land in a whole other country. With me, I can change the course of somebody's life and give them years.
Well, that's terrific. How do people get in touch with you, Miracle Man?
No, I'm not Miracle Man. I'm just doing a good job.
Okay.
I try hard. I'm not.
Listen, I think all practices should be like this, truthfully.
Well, I mean, you know, this type of research was taken to the House and Human Services Committee.
Yeah.
Years ago, and they looked at the data, and you can't argue with the data.
No.
It's been replicated and studied again. It keeps people healthier, keeps them out of the hospital. But it may not be for all people. I don't think it's for everybody. I don't think everybody necessarily needs this. I can't think of anybody that wouldn't off the top of my head, but imagine there are people that say, well, I'm perfectly healthy and I don't really need it. I do everything I'm supposed to do. Maybe they're right. But everybody's going to get sick. Everybody, unless you're going to just unfortunately kill over dead, you're probably going to get sick.
Yeah.
And in the current healthcare system, you're going to be running into roadblocks. You're going to be running into phone systems, waiting times, not knowing who to go to, not knowing where to go. And a lot of what we do is actually, I would consider advocacy. I mean, we fight for people. My staff fights for them. I fight for them. We fight against insurance companies. We fight against dealing with hospitals. The crunch that a hospital has is, in order to get admitted, you have to be sick enough under government criteria. So if you don't make the government criteria, it's called interqual, you're sent home. And yet medicine's an art. It's not a science. It's not putting square pegs into square holes. It's solving problems and helping human life. And that's a lot of what we do.
I think it's absolutely terrific what you're talking about. I've seen some of these things that you're talking about hospitals sending you home, about waiting in waiting rooms, and all of that stuff. I think this is terrific, and I think it's a way to go. Now, how do people get in touch with you?
Let's 215 PREVENT.
215 PREVENT. That's easy, but could be easier.
215 PREVENT.
And then Dr. Mark Rabinowitz has a free consultation. 30 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever it is. And you can just call his Southampton office, 215-PREVENT. I think it's great. I think you're doing a great job. And I'm happy to talk to you.
Guys, thanks for talking to me, too. Have a good week.
And take care of your
cold, yes.
Yeah, take 2 aspirin and call me tomorrow.
I will. Okay. Thanks for asking. Bye-bye.
See ya. Okay, Dr. Rabinowitz. What a great guy he is.